To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
We always do.
We're
back again on the precipice. Yeah, on the precipice of potentially World War III. A lot has changed. You know, we had a good long break there. It's Super Bowl Sunday. So the Bengals lost.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, as the Cincinnatian in the room, I think everyone's just shocked and still pleased that we made it there.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I remember being with you in Cincinnati when they won one of their games, and there was celebratory gunfire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cincinnati definitely was taking that seriously. Yeah. I just didn't bring it up until now. So, but we're back, everyone. We have our cephalopod liaison to the deep, Justin.
Hello.
We have our resident expert in most things, / search engine genius, Moneypenny, with us. And you have me, your host to the end of the world, Brian. Nice. So, Justin, how have things been? You've been a busy man.
Yeah, just staying busy. I'm trying to keep my head above water.
Yep. Yeah, same thing. Been cooking food and, you know, living the life, I guess. So, Moneypenny?
Yeah, pretty much. Just trying to stay busy and learn how to adult, which I feel like is a never-ending process.
I feel like adulting's the worst decision I ever made.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Cool. I mean, on the face of it, it's like, I get to make my own decisions, and then it's like, I have to make all my own decisions.
Yeah,
every one of them,
I catch myself every day going, I need an adult. Like an adult to your adult. Someone who actually knows what they're doing.
Can you pay someone for that?
Yes. They're called personal assistants.
Oh my gosh, this is brilliant.
And a good one follows you around. It's like, no, Brian, you should be doing this right now.
Literally smack me. Yeah. Don't eat that.
Like, I need one with a cold prod.
No more sour gummies.
Well, you know, fortunately, our personal assistants aren't here to prevent us from drinking this delicious bourbon tonight.
Sweet.
Now, this is a cool one, guys. It's a Lexington Town Branch. Now, we bought this because there's so many new bourbons popping up. A lot of them are being made in different states. Ohio has a strong presence with their bourbon making right now, which is really surprising. But this one actually is pretty traditional. It is one of the newest distilleries that is on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail.
It's a very interesting bottle.
There are a lot of comments on how cool this bottle is. It's a square bottle. It presents like a much more expensive bourbon than it really is. It's a $30 or so bottle of bourbon.
Oh, so a nice mid-range.
Yeah, this distillery opened in 2012, so it's pretty new. There were two or three other ones that opened around the same time. Wilderness Trail and Rabbit Hole were two of the other ones. So this is their entry. They said that they have a big backing. A big company owns them. So they came in looking to prove something. The reviews on this are extraordinarily mixed. One person said that it tasted like acetone,
nice,
which is concerning. Cool. And another person said that it actually was pretty good, but it does have a more like sharp green taste to it. So I'm sure it's
I like a nice hint of acetone in my
I like it always. A little bit of turpentine. Yeah. Really brings out the forward note.
Yeah. Really puts hair on your chest.
Yeah. So this is a 90 proof, 72% corn, 15% barley, and 13% rye.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty low rye.
It's a good-looking bottle. I mean, everything in presentation
looks
great.
I like the bottle. When you look at it, because you can see through it, it kind of has an optical illusion thing going on a little bit.
Yeah, it's a
very cubular, if that's a word.
It is now.
It is now.
Texted. That's a word now. So bothered by that.
What just became a word? There's something that just became a word that is completely incorrect, and it drives me nuts, and I can't think of it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking like this year?
In the last couple of years.
Gosh.
Eerie something. I can't think of it. I will later.
But let me guess, it violates all the rules but still gets accepted.
Yes. Yes.
Annoying.
It's like polyamory, where it has roots in two different languages and therefore I don't want to say it.
Well, no, this was something that actually means the opposite. When you add this prefix to it, it means the opposite of what its original meaning was. Okay. Irregardless is now a word.
No, officially. But it's not a word.
It hurts my soul. It is in the dictionary. But I've been following this interesting man, and I can't think of his name because I'm old and forgetful, on YouTube, that he's an English fanatic. He studies the history of English, and he said if it's a common misusage, it quits being a misusage.
Yes.
Because people control the language. Mm-hmm. If it's spoken, you cannot say it's a common error in language, because if it's common enough, then it's just the language.
I just can't fathom when we actually put texted in there. I was like, that's not correct, because text can be an action.
Yeah.
It's a text you're sending. Yeah. And then they're like, no, that's incorrect. Just add an ed to the end. Like, that, no. Text Ted?
It's insane.
No.
Yeah.
The English language is fascinating.
It's always
involved.
It's so always involving.
Let's give this a shot and see if it's cubular.
Okay. Oh, that's quite cubular.
Whoa. I kind of like it. Yeah. There's something in that flavor profile that is uncommon, and I'm trying to decide what it is.
I think that's the acetone.
Turpentine.
Turpentine.
I don't know. So when I think of alcohol that tastes like acetone, all I can think of is Chinese rice wine.
Oh, yes. That's very much
that's
a strong
like,
hint of it.
Are you sure you gave me the right bottle?
Yeah.
No, this has okay, I understand what they're saying about this is kind of fresh. Like, it's not aged till it's completely mellowed out. You get a little almost grass note in it. So it's got a bit of sour. But the profile, the flavor profile is
the
wonderful.
Sour lingers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not that front end sharpness that you get a lot with bourbons. It's like a lingering sharpness.
It is. It's afterwards. And it's, I mean, it's not a...
It's very cubular. It's
the first cubular bourbon we've tried.
It is.
So that'll be our word for these from now on. It wouldn't make the top five recommendations, especially at the $30 price point.
But if someone gave you a bottle of it,
I would be,
don't
be
upset.
Be mad at them.
I would be all kinds of happy with that. So, to all our people still waiting on your alcohols to be drank, obviously we are 3-man crew, 3 weeks out tonight, so we are going to get to it. We are things that seem to be calming down, and I need to knock on wood now when I say everybody. Mm. Hopefully you didn't hear us.
Yeah.
But guys, let's just kind of get into this. We had a bunch of stuff we wanted to talk about, but I just took the reins and said, we've got to talk about, you know, the current events, which we don't usually do, but this is not politics in a real sense of the way. It's a war going on in Ukraine, an actual street fighting war. It has been probably the most peculiar war I've seen in my lifetime, because we're not getting any type of actual videos and feeds that I can find. It's a lot of like aftermath photos and a lot of stuff.
I've actually been watching a lot of on the street Ukrainian videos.
So they're
taken
out there
with cell phones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. TikTok and the Facebook Reels are full of them right now, and it's actually really interesting. There was a video taken of the 13. I don't know if you've heard about the 13 Ukrainians on an island. A warship came, a Russian warship came and announced over the loudspeaker, surrender and we won't destroy you. They said, go fuck yourself. And they were destroyed.
Well, I followed that. And then it turned out the last news I heard is that they were all still alive on the island.
That I haven't found, but I did find the video from the island.
Yes.
One of them did film with their cell phone, and they're all shouting F you Putin and F you Russia. I think Putin made one huge miscalculation, and that he was essentially attacking other Russians.
Yes.
I think he misunderstood the integrity and the... ability to fight back of the Ukrainian people. I'm loving this. I think it's great that they're standing up and fighting. And when it first was announced, I felt like World War III was inevitable. I'm feeling more and more positive.
I talk a lot about with some good friends of mine that are versed in how these things work, because they've been there and done this. And they're all saying too, this is just one of the more peculiar things they've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's strange. They're coming in and it's like they're bombing infrastructure, but then they're leaving that area, but then they're back in that area. It's just, yeah, it's just really odd. They took Chernobyl early on. Like,
yeah.
But
yeah, which is kind of odd. The one thing they have done that will inevitably lead to them winning, mm-hmm, they've taken control of all the nuclear power plants in the Ukraine now.
Right.
And that was a very tactical decision. You control the electrical grid, which is, that's about 85-87% of their electrical grid is nuclear power. You take control of the electrical grid, you've kind of won the fight. But I was looking at kind of where Russia stacks up against NATO, yeah, and other forces, and they really don't compare. But this is something Clint and I have talked a whole lot about, is I've been saying this for years, the axis that we would have the most trouble with on a world scale would be Russian money backing Chinese troops and artillery, and the craziness of Kim Jong-un. Mm-hmm. That is the trilogy right there I think we would have the most trouble with. But currently, my biggest fear, though, is that this is, if it becomes a black eye to Putin, because Putin already has a black eye in Chechnya, and he's a very proud man, and I don't know how his level of pride versus his level of crazy. I don't know where that level is.
Right.
He's a very intelligent man. He is. He's brilliant. You can't lead the KGB and then whatever it, the predecessor of the KGB for this many years.
And not get killed by
it. Yeah. And, I mean, everyone should be watching the documentary Burning Down Moscow. They'll tell you who Putin is. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. But anyway, my fear is if it does become another Chechnya, I don't know how far he is willing to go to make it not be another Chechnya. Is he willing to drop a Hiroshima-sized bomb? Because he's already mentioned that, which is considered small by the today's standards,
yeah,
but it's still nuclear warfare.
Yeah, it's still quite destructive.
Yeah, and it would level an entire city.
It sets a weird precedent, too, because we actually, the daisy cutter bombs we built to use against bunkers or whatever they were using them against, they have more of a yield than the bombs used at the Big Boy and Little Boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is insane. These are conventional bombs. It's just how much the technology's changed.
What were you about to say, Monica?
Well, what I'm curious about, because I've studied quite a bit about Putin, and I kind of agree with your assessment, like, so far in, you know, in terms of official statements, it sounds like he is playing this off as Ukraine is part of Russia, we're just here to reclaim this.
Yeah.
And technically, he is partially correct, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the Ukrainian state as we know it today is a relatively young country, circa 1991.
Yeah.
It had a brief period of independence right around the Russian Revolution, like 1917 to 1922, I want to say.
Yeah.
But prior to the Russian Empire, so Imperial Russia, it was its own country. It did have its own kind of ethnic identity centered around Kiev. And in their minds, in the Ukrainian minds, they are not Russian.
And that's the other thing I've noticed. He did this with the Chechen War. He painted the Chechens as another race, as an other.
Yep.
And I've noticed I've seen a lot of propaganda that's actually coming out of Russia. It's not what he's showing to the world, but what he's showing to the Russian people.
To the people, yeah.
And he's moving in that direction, talking about Ukrainians not being Russians, they're not real people, kind of painting them as this other, to try to get the Russian people on their side. I think he just doesn't understand how connected the world is at this
He doesn't moment. Understand it at all. Alex Terrible is the lead singer of Slaughter to Prevail, which is a Russian death metal band. It's kind of weird because they have a huge presence in the U.S.
Yeah.
So to see that jump, I mean, lots of foreign bands get, especially metal bands, get good presences here. But he actually came out and did a video and very broken English said that that his band, he speaks for the band, and they don't support this war, and that they've done concerts in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And they just consider the Ukrainians like their neighbors. Yeah. They don't see it as some kind of
This should issue. Come as no surprise to anyone that knows who these people are, but Pussy Riot's come out and said the exact same thing.
Absolutely.
Of course, Pussy Riot has been arrested at least.
Yeah.
All the band members have been arrested 15 or 16 times.
Absolutely.
Because they have said, fuck you, Putin, for 15 years.
Yeah, like, pretty much the entire
yeah,
time.
Since the inception. It is a band based around the idea of fuck you, Putin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like their whole identity.
Yeah. But I do love the Ukrainian president. I think that's something that is missing in a lot of the world's leaders is that willingness to fight, mm-hmm. that integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a man who's very wealthy, besides being the Ukrainian president. He was an actor beforehand and a lawyer.
Comedian.
He owns homes outside of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
He could have left as soon as this started, and he said, no, I'm going to stay and fight.
He also said, come up here and I'll just give you a gun.
Yeah.
That was pretty impressive. He's not even playing. He's like, no.
I can't remember the name of the town, and I'm sure I would butcher the name if I could remember it.
Oh, God.
But there's a town that is, I believe it's the second most populous city in the Ukraine, or Ukraine. The Ukraine is something a Russian would say. So it's
yes.
Ukraine. It's a college town. And so many of the people there, it's like one-third of the population is foreign students. And these foreign students, in a large portion of them are staying and fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And he sent a bunch of guns there and said, if you want to fight, here's guns. And we're going to take these 10 people that know how to use these guns and show you how to use them. We're going to set up checkpoints. And it's so funny that the news of Putin, this is how connected the world is. The news of Putin's first actions in Ukraine wasn't broken by any press corps. It was broken by Google Maps. It was literally people that were following it. It was an independent group that has a website that's been watching Putin's actions on the border, and they got a Google Maps notification saying that there was a traffic jam on a main road.
And that was the convoy.
Yeah, and they knew instantly. They zoomed in, and lo and behold, they see tanks.
Yeah, surprise, there's not many traffic jams on that border.
Definitely not. Pretty desolate.
So, what do we think Putin's goals are here besides just like an ideological reunification?
That's what I feel it is. That's so. You take the Chechen War, which 1994 to 1996, you see Russia get a huge black eye in Chechnya. They can't take Chechnya, even though they're this huge superpower. They can't take Chechnya, and it's 5,000 Chechen rebels that stopped them. And Putin, at the time, he was just the leader of the KGB. I say just, but that's who he was.
Right.
Yeah.
And he used that. He hated the Chechens for that. He literally hated them. Because no one offends Mother Russia like that. No one gives Mother Russia a black eye like that. So he used that. Obviously, he bombed 4 apartment buildings, killing over 600 people. That's what burning down Moscow is about. We've proven that it was done with explosives that only the KGB have. They own and run the factories that make these explosives. He killed over 600 people of his own people, blamed it on Chechen rebels, which the rebel groups had been broken up for 4 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And So he got a bunch of backing by the Russian people to become prime minister on the back of a war, saying he was going to take out these Chechen rebels, that they were scum, that they were something other than. And I really feel like he's playing this from the beginning, that he wanted to reunite Mother Russia. And I don't even think it's a USSR thing. I don't think it's a Soviet thing. I think it's Mother Russia. I think it's Tsarist Russia. I think he has this idolized, romanticized view of pre-1920s Russia.
Russia, yeah.
I fully feel he's Tsarist in his approach.
Well,
I may be incorrect. I mean, I, I'm not a Russian expert, but that's the feeling I get from everything.
He would not be alone in that. I mean, after the fall of the Soviet Union, especially in Russia, people were searching for another identity.
Yeah,
but
a national identity.
But you have to think, like, it had been long enough that there were very few people who had actual working knowledge of what Imperial Russia was like.
Yeah.
So reclaiming Eastern Orthodoxy was one way that people felt that they were reclaiming their identity. And then kind of creating an identity around Mother Russia was also very popular.
Yeah.
And there was a great rise in nationalism in, not just in Russia, but in Belarus, in Estonia.
Yeah.
In a lot
the entire Eastern Bloc.
Yeah. Right.
Another thing, during the Bolshevik Revolution, I mean, the Bolsheviks really tried to erase that nationalist Mother Russia, imperialist Russia.
Yes.
So they kind of got robbed of an identity through that revolution.
Yep.
Whether you agree with that revolution or not, that they worked really hard to erase the history. And I think that's why there's such a clamoring and such a romanticization of pre-Bolshevik Russia.
Yeah.
And I think Putin was raised in kind of that generation that was really searching for a national identity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really easy to look back with rosy-colored glasses. I think that's kind of where his mindset is. And the man's ego doesn't seem to know any bounds.
Right.
I mean, the guy barely ever wears a shirt.
Does he still publish that annual calendar?
I hope to God he does.
I
want a copy
so.
Of his calendar.
I want
really
it
did.
So
you
bad.
Know his Tinder profile is just all him topless in a Speedo holding large fish.
Riding a big horse.
Or a bear.
Oh my God.
Like holding large fish on the back of a white
or
stallion.
Riding a bear holding a horse. That could be in there. That would be a good shoot, man.
Yeah.
So my take on this is that this is more than likely, and I hope to God I'm wrong about this, capitalization on the collapse of basically every economy.
Yeah.
You have Klaus Schwab talking about the Great Reset. This is a great opportunity. Well, I don't think that China missed that. If you look at what happened with China and Taiwan recently, they had China will disappear, you guys. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah.
Look at what happened up leading up to COVID-19. They had people saying, hey, we've had something happen. There's this disease, and it disappeared.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of protests going on. People were fighting, wanting Taiwan to remain free. China has always been encroaching on them.
Yeah.
We have China and Russia talking now, and there's talks of the anti-dollar axis. They're mm-hmm. trying to kind of bust up the petrodollar.
And Russia really needs, with these new rounds of
sanctions
mm-hmm. on them, these very specific sanctions focusing on the oligarchs, which is actually kind of a brilliant move on our part, but Russia needs China because of that. And China is in a very powerful position. For one, they could send 1 billion troops and still be fine.
Yes.
And Putin has to be setting on way more money than we know of.
Mm-hmm.
He's literally supplied 1/3 of the world's oil
for
over a decade.
Well,
and he's not spending it on the Russian people.
No.
And we're not, Justin, you and I had just had a conversation before we started recording about how the U.S. exports sweet crude
mm-hmm.
to bring in raw crude.
Yeah, which is sour crude.
Which is the whole thing is a money scam, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is.
All these people have ties to these pipelines and stuff. That's why they get shut down for environmental reasons, but then they'll be open back up when...
And it's funny, because the big pipeline we hear about here never was shut down. A piece of it was shut down. That's the Keystone Pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And that pipeline was going to go to Mexico. Like, yeah. That's the part that got shut down.
Right.
Like, we use that strictly for export. It does nothing but sweet crude.
Yeah.
Like, they act like, oh, the gas price would be so much lower if we just finished that Keystone. Keystone's been operational for a decade.
Yeah.
Like, it has nothing to do with gas prices. You think the president has anything to fucking do with gas prices?
He doesn't know
how gas prices work.
I have only seen our president, the lowest gas prices we got were actually because I believe it was Russia and another country had a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
That was when oil went negative. And my dad was like, this is unheard of. That happened recently.
Yeah.
And I do believe that happened because the guy we had in the White House was so far out there, you never knew what you were going to get.
They couldn't predict him.
Could not. And that led to some very weird stuff. He is the first president also that I've ever heard of to actually threaten OPEC, and they
reacted. Yeah. You know, I have kind of a troubled view of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say he didn't do some things right. I love his approach with China. The things I don't love is what I call the salesmanship.
Yeah.
Like with North Korea. He talked a big game about North Korea and then got nothing. And talked like he got something. He got nothing. He didn't get the agreement he wanted.
Yeah.
He said a bunch of nice things about Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-un said a bunch of nice things about him, but that did nothing.
Right. I mean, it's...
I feel like...
Rhetoric.
Just like any other president, it was rhetoric. It's snake oil salesman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like we've had a good... powerful, strong leader since Roosevelt.
When you get to that now in the modern day, you're going to run up against the propaganda engine that we have functioning here.
Yeah.
And that's going to be very difficult. We have all the isms we can throw at someone.
Yeah.
Oh, he's too firm on this. He doesn't believe in this. They will say you're against something that you're absolutely not, and it sticks. It's popular.
A lot
opinion.
Of times, if you know how to play the game, which Trump did, a lot of times, if you know how to play the game, you're saying certain things to get them to look at this. Prime example is something Putin did, and it was brilliant. So during the Sochi Olympics, he made this big deal about making it illegal to be gay. In Russia, this big deal. He said, we may even detain homosexual or LGBTQ athletes, all this stuff. Putin does not give a goddamn about homosexuals. Never has.
Never.
He has friends that are homosexual. We know this. But he knew that the Western media was going to take the bait.
Yeah.
And what he did over the next 6 months was disappear about 360 of his political enemies, and we did not notice.
No.
They literally did a hour-for-hour count, value count, on the news coverage. There were 14 hours of coverage for the banning homosexuals to every half an hour of coverage of him disappearing 360 some odd people in 3 months.
That's what happens when you have a propaganda engine running in the United States. And the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act was never demodernized.
Yeah.
Well, so. And for the record, I did a paper on LGBT rights in Russia and Eastern Europe.
Yep.
Now, this was a while ago, but Putin was in power. And what he was saying really wouldn't have made a huge impact just because it kind of already sucks for them there, right? If you have money, you can be whoever you want.
Yeah.
If you don't have money, watch out.
Yeah.
And that's why I am encouraged by things like the oligarchs speaking out and saying, hey, we really don't like that this war of yours is affecting our pocketbooks.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would be curious to get your guys' take. So Ukraine is definitely... considered by Europe, Western Europe, to be part of Europe. Whereas Russia has always been kind of other, even though it straddles
Eurasia.
The border.
Yeah, it's Eurasia.
And so let's say, hypothetically, Russia takes over Ukraine, whatever fallout comes of that, and now the Russian border is deeper into Western Europe.
So,
what do we think the next step would be?
Well, this is why everyone was saying World War III, is because the next step, he is now bordered against NATO allies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he makes a move against them. We are obligated.
Yes.
We have treaties in place that puts us into war immediately.
The same way that World War II happened?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why everyone was saying World War III. So it really depends on Putin, and it depends on how he does things. The more peacefully he can kind of annex Ukraine instead of conquering Ukraine, the less likely we are going to be in World War III, I think, because for some reason the world is all about face value and not about actuality on the ground. It's more about what does it look like, how popular is it, how unpopular is it. So I think if he was to just start bombing cities and leveling the entirety of Ukraine, then we'd be looking at World War III.
We would. That's not happening at all. It's not even close to that. What you're hearing, I don't even think... I mean, it's bad. It's really bad.
Yeah.
Some of it I've seen. But it's not... when you would hear this, that they've destroyed this entire city, I thought, my God, this is going to be the end. And then, no, the city's still there. They're still resisting. It's actually,
I think that very more has combat. To say with, say, about the Ukrainian resiliency.
The Ukrainian resiliency and the Russian troops' probably unwillingness to even deal with this.
Well, I've read somewhere, and my stats might be off. As I recall, if I remember it correctly, 84% of his entire ground force are 18 to 20 year olds that were conscripted that have less than 6 months of training.
Wow.
So these are people that don't want to fight. And have you heard about the roadside thing? Zelensky had all the electronic road signs in Ukraine to say F you, Russia. And it worked. They can't find their way because these 18, 19, 20-year-old kids have no idea where they're going. They don't have training. And all the road signs just say, fuck you, go home.
Well, and I'm sure that, I mean, I'd be interested to hear whether, like, Google Maps is even still functional there.
Yeah.
Like, well, I would think that they would stop.
There was a beautiful video I watched yesterday, actually. I think I saved it. If I did, I'll post it to the page. It was a video of probably 15 to 20 Russian soldiers. They all look very young. They're lost. They haven't eaten in at least a day. And these Ukrainian teenagers and young adults feeding them and giving them cell phones to call their families back in Russia. And these guys are so thankful. They're in tears calling their moms and dads, telling them that they're still alive because they haven't been able to talk to them in a month. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful video.
Well, conscription is mandatory. There are some exceptions, but in Russia, every male from the ages of 18 to 27 has to serve a minimum of 1 year. It used to be 2 years, but let's think about that. So in our country, for example, you can join the military at 18. Yeah. We don't currently have a draft, but we do have a history of forced conscription. These poor kids... First of all, many of them probably didn't want to serve in the first place.
Yeah, this wasn't my choice.
They definitely didn't want to be in war.
Yeah.
And these Ukrainian people speak Russian too, and they look just like them. And why it's are we here?
Like, it's not like fighting someone that you can tell who the enemy is.
Right,
And it's kind of odd, because I actually kind of agree with a forced service to the community. But I think it should be a forced service to the community.
Not to the military. You can choose to
be in the military, or you can choose to build roads, or you can choose to dig irrigation dishes.
Or you can choose to work in
a library,
you know, the passport department.
Yeah.
There you go.
But it's like early Athens. Early Athens, you had to serve... course, a grown person was 15 in early Athens.
Right.
But at 15 years old, from 15 to 17, you had to serve the community. Mm-hmm. And the reason behind this, they felt like it would form a community. And it worked for hundreds of years. Because, maybe once you get out, this guy's a millionaire that's a merchant, and you're a lowly shopkeep. But you were his general in a battle 20 years ago, so there's respect for one another.
Yeah.
There's a connection there, a bond there that creates a community.
Yeah.
And so I kind of agree with the idea behind that, but to force a bunch of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds to go fight in a war that they don't want any part of, I think that's...
That's been a failure about every time we've done it.
Failure.
Yeah.
Why would you want that to be your army?
Yeah. I mean, there've got to be... I don't know the appropriate terms, but there have got to be units within their military of seasoned soldiers who are like, whatever you want me to do, right?
There's professional soldiers.
So, like, how many of those are there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you don't have to go far in Russia to find a bunch of people willing to go fuck someone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even care who. Like, you want me to invade the next town over? Like, I don't care.
Yeah. So, I just had a really random thought, which was... Gosh, how old is Putin now? Because I feel like, you know, he's been part of...
He just hasn't aged, yeah.
He hasn't aged, but he's also only 69 years old, which isn't that old.
He had to be a young man.
There are plenty of world leaders who are much older than him.
I believe in 98, that is either 96 or 98 is when he became prime minister.
So he became acting something president, I think, at that time in 1999. I think that was right.
That was Boris during Yeltsin, the buildup of the second Chechenian conflict.
Right. So Yeltsin was having some health difficulties, yeah. I believe, and yeah. and Putin he was definitely the chosen successor.
He made his move at the perfect time. He really did. What I read about it in that documentary, I recommend it to anybody. I can't seem to find it anywhere. I keep on trying to find it to share links to Burning Down Moscow. I've watched it I'm fairly certain over a decade ago. I can't find it on YouTube. I can't find it on Wikipedia.
Welcome to the new age.
Yeah. I feel like it's been suppressed.
Probably.
But it is an eye-opening video of how Putin exactly came to power. And, I mean, there was video in the documentary of obvious KGB agents killing civilians through fire.
Oh, yeah.
He's a kind of a tactical genius. He's a politician through and through, and by any means necessary. He knows how to play the Game of Thrones. He's one of those guys that would have survived in the War of the Roses era.
Yes, absolutely. He seems to have an amazing understanding of the ups and downs of political power.
Yes.
And in Russia, for centuries, that has been quite a dangerous game to play.
And he keeps coming out on top. Mm-hmm. It seems like Russia responds to the strong-arm leader, though.
They do.
It just seems like they almost require it.
They've not known much else.
They really haven't.
I mean, there have been books written about, you know, the last czar.
Yeah.
And we have, in the Western world, I feel like we've kind of idealized him as like, oh, you know, the communists killed him and his whole family. Yeah. Gosh, isn't that sad?
Yeah.
He wasn't like a terrible human being as far as history tells us, but he also wasn't a powerful leader. He wasn't leading the country in a direction that...
Yeah, he was going broke, wasn't he?
Well... That's a much longer conversation, but Russia has been going broke for quite a while, and that's why oligarchy, rather than democracy, in my opinion, became the way of Russia post-communism.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of like North Korea, how they were supposed to have failed 100 times.
100 times.
But, yeah, and they haven't.
But
they
just keep
North
on.
Korea,
trying to keep propping them up.
Yeah.
And North Korea has a few things going for it that Russia or the Soviet Union in general never did. First of all, the Soviet Union was enormous.
Yeah.
I don't think you cannot conceive of how much landmass that is.
It's insane.
To control. So you can't be everywhere all at once, no matter how hard you try and no matter how
it's
hard you force people to, you know, relocate. North Korea is a relatively geographically small place.
They're tiny.
You know, they border China with like a mountain range that's pretty difficult to cross.
Yeah.
And I get it. We have planes now, but we also have radar. Like, they're kind of protected.
A little bit.
Yeah. So, and who's really going to mess with them? I mean, they were such a quiet, like, kind of sleeper cell for a while that no one really needed to worry about them because we have bigger fish to fry, right?
Yeah.
You know, we were so worried about Moscow for 50 years.
And Koreans also were subjugated for a long, long time by the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty powerless for a long time because... there were some pretty horrible atrocities done to them by the Japanese.
I would maintain that Chinese and North Korean relations are as good as they are right now because they have a shared hatred.
Yeah, because at the same
Japanese.
Time, Manchuria, southeastern China was conquered by Japan.
Yeah.
Japan made a lot of big imperialist moves at the turn of the century, and people don't seem to recognize
they don't really... I think at the turn of the century... The United States did not really pay attention very much to what was going on
in
Asia.
We were more worried about our power and what we were doing.
Yeah. And we had much more regular ties with Western Europe, which makes sense, you know, ethnographically. I have Chinese family members who, to this day, like, cannot accept Japan. I mean, they won't even go to Japantown in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Like, they like they won't do it.
It's kind of crazy. There's a great book. It's fiction, but it's absolutely beautifully written, and it's an epic about generations of a Korean family and the invasion from Japan and, like, them being sent to Japan as third-class citizens. Mm-hmm. It's called Pachinko. Jin Min Lee, I believe is her name.
Okay.
She's a Korean American, and it is an absolute beautiful book, and it's full of just fantastic history that is factual. Like, it gives you a really good understanding of that conflict and the hatred there. I mean, the Koreans were literally treated like third-class citizens. It was pretty insane.
So I had a very weird conversation with a friend of mine, and they were talking about how Japan and a lot of their, like, trauma was based on having nuclear bombs dropped on. I was like, wait a minute. People live in Hiroshima and Nagasaki now.
Yeah.
Like, no, it was not that. So this is the culture that came up with seppuku.
Yeah.
Like, these guys were on a different vibe and for a long time.
Look at feudal Japan. Mm-hmm. That is such an interesting era, but you're literally talking about Japan being five different countries for a very long time that were at constant war. I mean, it wasn't until Nebukadnezar that there was any kind of unity in the warring states of Japan, and you're talking at late 1500s, and then that peace only held for about 50 years, mm-hmm. and then it broke out again. I mean, you're talking about a people that have fought for a long, long time, and we tend to think of Japan as homogenized, as one race, one group.
Right.
You're talking about very distinct tribes. Very. I mean, there are natives of some of the farthest southeastern islands of Japan that have European features. They don't have the trifold, is what the Iceland is called, the trifold. They don't have it. Mm-hmm. They're ethnically a different people.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's a very culturally diverse people. And the Jinyus, so that's where we kind of see tattooing arise for the first time ever. They were much darker skinned people. They're Southern Islander people. They were known for their sword making and their sword use. They were badasses.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of my favorite people. But we tend to think of Japan as one people, and it's a very diverse, interesting place.
So
that spent a lot of time fighting each other.
Japan actually is the source of jujitsu.
Yeah.
Japanese jiu-jitsu actually deals with horseback combat.
Yeah.
And things like this. It deals with everything. And it also starts to deal with the hand-to-hand. And then you have the split off of catch wrestling mixing in with...
what's the...
Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
No, the Japanese... it's catch wrestling. There's a name for it in Japan. It's a comp. I know you know it.
It's funny because...
They use the sleeves of their gi.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? It's got a name, and I can't think what it is.
Well, they a lot of your moves, like the Kimura and stuff, are from Japanese Jiu-Jitsu. And it's this weird branch over. But the Japanese also ran a Unit 731 that happened during World War II.
Oh, yeah.
So it's funny, because people don't realize that Japan, I think they were pretty convinced they could win if they kept pushing forward.
Yeah.
Because they were going to win at all means. This was a biological weapons... chemical weapons experimentation.
There's a time suck episode on that.
I could imagine. It's bad.
It's pretty brutal.
And everyone was given immunity so that the U.S. could get the research.
Yeah.
And now look, COVID-19.
Yeah.
I'll be darn.
So that martial art you were talking about, what...
It's a catch wrestling. They use the sleeves of their gi to...
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think what it's called.
In BJJ, you have gi chokes where you can use the collar of the gi and the sleeve.
I can't think what it's called. It's pre-jiu-jitsu.
Jeet-kune-do?
No, Jeet-kune-do.
That's using their leverage against them. Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, that's Bruce Lee's. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm using...
Aikido.
Aikido, that's
mm-hmm.
it.
Oh, Aikido. Okay, that was what I found first, but I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, that was kind of the first, it started to incorporate the catch wrestling and then kind of branched off and became its own thing. I've been studying some of the deep kung fu. My new favorite martial artist is Tom Wu. I don't know if you know who that is.
I do not.
He was in Marco Polo. He was a Hundred Eyes.
Oh, my gosh.
Made a break-off movie of a Hundred Eyes movie.
I absolutely love that show.
He is the real deal. He's a master of Hungar, which is an ancient Chinese kung fu. He is the real fucking deal. He has been practicing martial arts since he's like 4 years old.
Yeah.
He is amazing. And he needs to write a book because he is actually one of the only people that's alive today considered a master of Hungar. And he needs to write a book of the Five Rings.
Yeah.
He
needs to. There we go.
Yeah, Hungar Karate and Wing Chun.
Yeah.
Wing Chun is the traditional.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
martial art in China.
Yeah. Hungar is one of the ancient five, if I'm correct.
It belongs to the Shaolin style.
It's one of the ancient Shaolin kung fus.
Oh, wow.
And he is the real deal. I mean, there's videos of him on YouTube practicing, and this guy is 4.5 foot vertical, kicking six inches above his own head, breaking boards while spinning. I mean, he's the real deal. He's become my new favorite because I like his approach. He's not out there like, look at me, look at me, look at me. He's just a badass.
Very true.
Bringing this back around, this is one of the fears that I talked to my dad about a little bit. And, you know, sanctions are funny because it's the way to make the common people pay directly out of pocket to try to prevent a war, I guess.
Yeah.
It's kind of silly.
I do like the specifics of this one. Tackling his buddies.
Yeah.
The oligarch buddies. That's a kind of brilliant.
That's a smart thing to do, but you get down to this. We've got these guys right now that are coming up in the UFC, and they're Dagestani Russians.
Really?
They're the... Probably the toughest man on earth with the best record right now is Khabib Nurmagomedov. He actually has a fight promotion called Eagle FC.
Is this the one that had all the beef with Conor that chased him in the bus?
Yes, he got glass in his eye and stuff. Yeah, he's unreal. His little brother got a win over the weekend, but there's another guy called Khamzat Chimaev. My dad just loves this dude. He's Muslim from Dagestan. And those guys just—I don't know—they've just taken care of their bodies, and just that's all they.
And they've been fighting bears since they were.
Well, and the guy, the guy's willing to fight 185 and 170, and it just looks like a destroyer.
Yeah.
Russians have their own version of jiu-jitsu, which is their boil down called combat sambo.
Okay.
The combat sambo is taught pretty openly over there. That's what Fedor practiced before. You know he.
Is through Russian hooks. Israeli.
That's
or
Israeli.
Russian?
That's
okay.
Israeli.
I was thinking it was or Israeli Mossad.
So, what we're worried about is they're going to keep just pushing these sanctions, and they're going to prevent these guys from being able to come over and fight. And these are normal people. These are the best athletes
these
in the world.
Are citizens.
And they have no. I mean, these guys are devout Muslims. They don't know. They don't care about the politics there.
Yeah.
Like
they just want to fight.
They don't. And I mean, coming from a country like Dagestan, like there are limited opportunities there.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they found these people a great avenue.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you fight in something like UFC for I don't know
five to ten years.
You make your money and you go back home and you live like a king, but not just you. I mean, these people are supporting
your family,
sometimes
villages.
Yeah, extended families and your whole towns in some cases. And I mean, we see that all the time here with people with like migrant workers from Mexico and South America.
Yeah.
Come in, make money, send it back. Yeah.
And so. I do think it was important, the band you were referencing earlier that came out against the war, one of the things that they brought up was, please don't penalize, like, normal Russian people for this war.
And
like,
that's the problem with all wars, because it all trickles down to the people that deserve it the least.
It does.
I mean, they pay the price.
Fighting the war, that's who's losing the war. That's,
World War II.
Yeah.
Cincinnati was a town with heavy German influence.
Yeah.
There were entire neighborhoods with German street names.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And during World War II, they changed all of those street names. They didn't want any affiliation with Germany whatsoever. These people had been living in this country for 300 years by this point. It seems absurd to even care. But even, you know, it took until, you know, within the past 5 years, we've changed some of the names of streets back to the original German names.
You like, look at...
come on.
our, over the last 20 years, the way we view Muslims in this country. And then you look at the very first country, which is a majority Muslim country, to recognize the United States as a sovereign nation was Morocco, if I'm not mistaken, which is a Muslim majority country. We've never had an issue with Muslims. And then all it takes is one thing to happen and the right narrative to get out there.
It keeps
on popping up in my head. I got to talk about it.
You are absolutely correct, by the way. 1777, December 20th, the Kingdom of Morocco was the first country to recognize the United States.
We've never had an issue with Muslims since the founding of this country.
It wasn't even an issue.
Yeah, it was a non-issue. We had very prominent people in all of our communities that were of all different faiths. That was the point of this fucking country.
The melting pot.
It really was.
But I mean, there's something that keeps on popping up in my head, and it's completely off subject, but one of my favorite Russian moments. So, I was... I graduated from massage school in 2005, and I struggled to, I picked a very female-dominated profession as a young man, and the problem with that is 90% of all your clientele base is always going to be female, and they feel comfortable with other women and older men. I was 21.
Yeah.
They don't feel comfortable with me because I'm of mating age.
Makes sense.
They feel less comfortable with me. So I struggled. I struggled to find work. I slowly built my own clientele.
I have a brother who did the exact same thing, by the way.
Really? Well, I built my own clientele base and was quite successful at it. And then 2008 happened, and during a recession, for some reason, when it comes to paying your light bill or your massage therapist, they always pick the fucking light bill.
I know, that's important.
While I was doing continuing ed credits, because you have to have 48 hours of continuing ed to keep your license every year, I studied Rolfing, which is a Russian massage. And I had to get Rolfed. And so I go to this woman. She was actually, I believe she was Russian and Turkish. She was built like a linebacker. And, so I walk in and she's like, "You get naked." And I was like, "Do I get a towel?" Or she literally hands me a hand towel. "This is for your parts." So I'm laying there. Now, I lay the hand towel very strategically. She immediately hooks a leg under my knee and around my back and just starts crushing me.
Yes.
Just bending me, just popping me. Yeah. I'm in horrible pain. I'm like, And then she lets go. She's like, "You're a pussy." She actually called me a pussy. And then I melt. Like, I felt amazing afterwards. She broke every bone in my body and then, like, rebuilt it.
This might be the most Russian thing I've ever heard of.
But, so, the girl I was with at the time had her... She was in the same room being massaged by Olga's sister, it looked like. When she got naked, she had her nipples pierced. And that woman thought it was so amazing that she went and got male family members to come look. Oh, no! With the nipples and the
lips.
And she's like, "Come look, come look, come look." And there's like four strangers like, "Oh, nice, nice." Like,
what a relaxing couple's massage.
She's pretty comfortable with her body. She's like, "Yeah, check them out."
Unfortunately, because that could have been real bad.
Yeah, but they only gave her a washcloth as well.
You gotta be selective. Which part of your most shows?
To pick apart. That reminds me of one of my friends. I may have told this story before. One of my friends told me many years ago. She had a 3-year-old, and she's a water bug. She loves to swim. She always has. She's a certified scuba diver. And so she wanted her son to learn how to swim as early as possible. So she started taking him to the Y for swim lessons. Well, at 3 years old, he went through this naked phase where he just loved to be naked.
Yeah.
Well, she would always take him to the ladies' locker rooms so they could wash off all the chlorine and change. Mm-hmm. Well, they get done with the swim lesson. They go to the ladies' locker room. She had just gotten him naked, then gotten herself naked, about to get in the shower. And he bolts straight out the door. Well, at the YMCA, they give you those tiny little towels that's only going to cover one something.
Right.
And she's like, so I'm debating, because there's like dads out there. Yeah. She's like, what do I do?
I've got to choose.
And I was like, what choice did you make? She's like, I threw it over my fucking head. They saw it all. They didn't know. And I was like, that's brilliant.
Oh, my God.
She's like, I had a naked little boy to catch. Like, I didn't have time to really think about it.
Yep. This is hilarious because I've been getting massages regularly for 20 years now. Yeah. I was a gymnast for a long time. I have arthritis everywhere.
Yeah.
And most of the time you go to a massage therapist in the United States and they're like, just take off like whatever you feel comfortable with, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm naked.
Europe is totally different.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Europe is different. But I recently was in Mexico and got a massage, and it was the one, this was the massage that I was like, I am like wondering when he's about to ask me whether I want a happy ending. Like, he got so close to so many areas, but I didn't dislike it, so I didn't say anything, and he didn't actually go there, but like, you know, like right down the side, like if I didn't have
no regard for your privacy,
absolutely. None. he gave no fucks about that.
See, I was trained in a very Western way where we're very lawsuit happy, so
yes.
As a male, you have to be extra careful, but you'd be surprised how many times you get proposed to as a massage therapist.
Really?
I've been proposed to in the middle of a massage more times than I can count.
It's amazing.
I've only had one massage ever that ended in sex. And it happened privately. It wasn't like I went to a massage spa.
There's not a place you need to look to bust.
I had an acquaintance who was a massage therapist, and I offered to like go to the spa that he worked at. He's like, no, I've got a table. I'll come over to your house.
In translation, that meant he wants to leave the door open for sex.
That is, I mean, that's what that meant. I'm not going to lie. I considered it a possibility.
Yeah.
And I'm not like upset.
Yeah.
That it led to that.
Yeah.
It's just the massage was better than the sex.
That's a sad statement.
It was a really good massage.
Yeah.
That maybe it's that. Let's just go with that. It was such a good massage that he just set the standard too high.
It's kinda odd though, because in massage school, my training was absolutely wonderful. The two founders of my school ended up being two of my teachers, and both of them have massaged all over the world.
Yeah.
One of which is from the Bahamas. She didn't own a pair of shoes till she was 16 years old. She has monkey feet because of this.
Yeah.
Like, she can pick things up and throw things with her feet. It's
absolutely
amazing.
That's awesome.
And she's a Jedi. She can like read your mind. She's an amazing human being. And she, to my knowledge, still is the only massage therapist in the state of Kentucky that is booked literally 2 years out. You have to book 2 years in advance because she is absolutely amazing.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's the longest book out I've ever heard of.
So, yeah. It's insane. It's even insane inside the industry. Like, that's just unheard of. Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's because she's just an amazing human being. But, so in Massage 2, I believe everyone should experience the class that is Massage 2. It is the hardest class, but it's the class you get massaged the most in.
Mm-hmm.
You literally show up in your pajamas every day because you know you're going to get naked and get massaged. It's amazing. But our last day, we're all about to graduate. This teacher, I don't want to say her name because I'm friends with her on Facebook and stuff. But she tells us we're literally just doing a free day. Partner up with whoever. Massage each other. This is the last time. So just enjoy it. So 4 hours, just massage each other and enjoy it.
Wow.
So she said, but before you massage, I'm going to leave. I've got to go run some errands. I'll be back. But I want you to pick an intention. As a class, pick intent for your massage. An emotional intention.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes back a couple hours later, walks into the room, and writes love on the board. And that is exactly what we had picked.
Yep.
She said it was palpable. She could feel it in the air. But one of the things we studied, it was a class of her design called, it's kind of a cliche name, but it's the paradigm shift. And what it's about is when you massage someone, you're not massaging a person. You're massaging every experience they've ever had. You're massaging everything they bring to the table and every possibility that they bring to the table. And that had never really impacted me in my career until about 3 years in. I had a client, and I had massaged this person probably 10 times. She was incredibly comfortable with me. I was incredibly comfortable with her. And I always set them down, do a little intake, talk about what medications they're on, like injuries, what do you want to work on today. I do my little intake, and I just put my hand on her shoulder, as I always do, and say, I'll be right back, disrobe to your comfort level, face down under the top sheet, and I'll knock before I enter. Well, I go and wash my hands, I knock, and I hear sobbing.
Yeah.
And I knock again, she responds, she said, you can come in. She is fully clothed, in the fetal position, crying. And it was because of where I had touched her on the shoulder.
Yep.
Her father, before he would beat her, would always touch her in that same spot.
Oh, God.
And that changed my perception of what I did in that moment.
Yeah.
It was kind of amazing. because you truly realize you are massaging everything they bring to the table.
Yeah, I've had a lot of those being from a, you know,
years of
child welfare and... I'll never forget this, man. I left from a high school where I was teaching at. I did everything there. I was a tech guy for them in a way.
Really?
Yeah. And then they kept doing full-time positions and giving them to, like, family members. Nepotism was hardcore in that school system. But it was all good. I ended up going over to Department of Child Services, and they asked me, they said, what's the one thing that you're worried about? And I was like, well, I have all these kids I work with. It's like, and I know something's wrong, and it kind of worries me that, you know, now I'll know. And I'll be darned, man, everything, like, it taught me to trust my instincts.
Yeah.
So many of these kids, I was like, yep, file here. Like, I'd get them on the other end of it.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. I get that, man. Like, it's so weird, too. The littlest thing will bring that back to someone if they're comfortable. And if they're not comfortable, they're always on guard.
If you give them the space and to be open and vulnerable, it's surprising what things can happen in that space. Yep. It's kind of beautiful. I've always been a person that people that I don't know well are perfectly comfortable telling me their entire life stories.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of enjoyed that because I love stories.
Yes. But I love learning about different people.
Me too.
I'm hyper aware of the fact that the way I grew up and my personal experience is not what other people experience.
I feel like everyone's got a story.
Absolutely.
And if you give them the space to tell it, they will. Mm-hmm. And especially if you give them a safe place in which they can be pure and honest. And when I recently taught a training class for 10 years, and I would have people telling me things that...
You didn't want to hear?
Yeah, it's that I didn't need to know.
Yeah.
But that's just part of it. Being an empath in this day and age, you just got to take it where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it happen in the gas station. The oddest places. I had a little old lady talk to me for an hour in the grocery store the other day, telling me her whole life story.
That has definitely happened to me.
Yeah.
And I find myself caring about these people that I will probably never see again.
Yeah.
Right.
And yet, I'll go back to my car afterwards and, like, really sit and think, like, what is poor Martha
going to
do today?
Oh, my gosh.
Like, and I might not think of that person often, but that day, after hearing that story...
It's going to impact you.
It does. Mm-hmm. And
I feel like people with that empathy, with that give people that space, tend to attract each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that's my tribe. Like, when I like become close with someone, I can guarantee they're an empath like me. It's very odd. Like, me and Brian circled each other for over 20 years without being close.
We
were acquaintances, and we always, like, locked in on each other when we were around each other, which was about once a year.
Yeah.
Like, we would have one night that we'd run into each other and talk for 4 hours and then not see each other for another year. And I don't think we... I don't think we... New mystery alarm's back.
Oh, no, it's a curse.
Damn it.
But, well, I don't think we had ever just hung out, you and I, on purpose, ever.
Right, until we did the podcast.
Until we did the podcast.
That's
really? Yeah, swear. This is new. But
so fun.
It's so strange because we are so similar in the way of empathy and the way we kind of view helping others and a responsibility to help others.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because I can almost tell within 5 minutes of meeting someone if they're part of my tribe.
Yeah, I've met some people that would seem to fit too, and it's just corrosive.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't do it. I'm like, I will never be mean to you directly unless you really cross me.
Yeah.
And that's an option.
Yeah. Yeah. My attitude is completely reflective of how you treat me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can, if someone tells you that I'm an asshole, believe them. If someone tells you I'm a nice guy, believe them.
Yeah.
Because chances are I was an asshole in certain situations and I was a nice guy in certain situations. And it was completely dependent on how I was treated.
Yep.
And, but I think it's funny because my brother and I have talked a lot about how people find each other. Like, we always find our tribe. One of the ways I'd always do it in a new restaurant is I'd quote Monty Python.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'd be like, are you suggesting that coconuts migrate? and they said, if it's carried by a swallow.
Like an African swallow?
I know instantly. If you stare at me like I'm an idiot, then we're probably not going to be buddies.
No.
But if you're like an African swallow, I'm like, yeah.
Yes, we can be friends. Yeah. Or, like, in that kind of situation, I'm often, I don't consciously test people, but there are some responses that immediately I'm like, oh, I really want to know more about this person.
Yeah.
I never would have pegged you to get that reference.
Yep.
Not that I was saying it so that you wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
I really have like a word vomit problem where
yeah,
I can't
too.
Stop.
Yeah. I think all empaths kind of have that.
I think so too. I can't help but share things.
Yeah. We've gotten cager as I got older. Because not everyone deserves to know you like that.
That's a hard thing for me.
That's been a process of learning over many years and being burnt. I've come to being guarded. I think empaths are born as open books. Kind of.
I have an opposite strategy where I don't want people to think that they like me because they got a certain version of me that isn't me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I try very hard to be authentically myself at all times, because if someone is going to like me and interact with me on a positive level, I want them to know who they're dealing with. Like,
I think the older I get, the more actively I try to get people to not like me.
That is a fantastic way to look at it. Just fantastic.
I don't care what you think, and I'd rather not think of me at all.
With the modern day, I have to remind myself, like, don't make these people not like you just because they're younger than you.
Yeah.
That's how people became old curmudgeons.
Yeah.
They were smart, but they just could say, all these youth don't get me. Yeah. Well, now we live in a generation where everything is shared. We're approaching the age of steam.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. You might meet a dude that's 10 years older than you and has his whole life together, and he just sucks.
Yeah.
And you might meet a 20-year-old that gets you and is on your vibe, and you guys are friends forever.
Yeah. And you have no idea why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I used to think that it was all about life experience and what people had actually seen.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I had a much earlier life experience than a lot of people.
Yeah.
In many ways. So I felt very disconnected from many people
my own age.
Me too.
And yet I end up, you know, constantly attracted to people who are very close to my own age. Not because necessarily they have had the same experience, but because they have a certain level of empathy.
Yeah.
And they have a certain level of, okay, because you went through that, I could understand why you would act in this manner.
Yeah. I don't know. The older I get, the more I want, you kind of got to be weird. to be in my circle.
Yeah, weird is a requirement. Yeah.
You have to have a sense of the absurd and be able to laugh at it.
Yes.
Because otherwise, if I can't laugh with you, we're not doing anything.
And you have to be able to laugh at yourself as well.
Yeah, you have to have a good sense of humor in all things, so, including yourself.
Genuine self-deprecation. Genuine.
Yeah.
It can't be like very canned. Is the sign of empathy.
Yeah.
Very narcissistic people will not self-deprecate. They will do it in a grandiose manner.
Yeah.
That's called a covert narcissist.
Yeah, and you actually see people, especially online.
When they're fishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're fishing for a compliment.
Right. It's like, oh no, you're not clumsy. Like, no, I'm fucking clumsy. Yeah, I run
I'm
into
so
walls.
I'm so ugly. I'm so fat.
Like, it's like... Gosh, I wish I could lose another 10 pounds is different from saying, I am so fat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yep.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I want to tie this all back together.
Okay.
In the most random way you could possibly think of.
Let's do it.
If I had to guess. Okay, you spoke of the band Pussy Riot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We know that Ukraine and Russia are verging on war. China's probably doing the same thing with Taiwan, but we'll see how that plays.
Yeah.
And you spoke of the band Pussy Riot.
Yeah.
We spoke of, you know, regulations against homosexuals and the acceptance of that throughout these countries and throughout time. Dorian Electra, the Austrian economist slash they their singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
Just released a song in October, I think, called My Agenda.
Yeah.
Which features the Village People and Pussy Riot.
Nice.
Oh my gosh.
That's fantastic.
That is such an amazing conglomeration.
And that's where we're at.
List.
So you've got Alex Terrible out there from Slaughter to Prevail, Demolisher, if you want a good song by them. They're a little over the top. Be prepared. And then Dorian releasing this one, which is just...
Yeah.
She's phenomenal. She is. Flamboyant is the funniest video I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
There's one specific scene in there that I always lose it at.
I feel like she's Bowie reincarnated.
That sure does seem like it.
I would agree with that 100%. Mm-hmm.
She definitely has some Freddie Mercury Bowie-ness in her blood.
Yep.
Yeah.
She's pretty amazing.
Yeah. For me, she's kind of the epitomization of, like, how... the relaxation of gender norms in our era works to someone's advantage.
Yeah.
I get that it's very confusing to a lot of people, and I'll admit I'm not 100% comfortable all the time when I see people really acting outside gender norms, but at the same time, it allows for expressions that are really innovative and really interesting.
When someone does it right, you can tell.
Yeah. It's been that way for a long time. You can go back to like 1860s France and look at someone like Voltaire.
Yes.
I mean, Voltaire was an openly bisexual, but he was a deist, which believes the God does exist, but we're his bastard children doesn't give a shit about us.
Right, he gives no fucks about us. Yeah. So we've just got to figure this shit out.
But I did want to in today on it's something I shared, but I just think it's such a poignant quote for this. When Einstein was asked what weapons would be used in World War III, he said, "I have no idea, but I do know what weapons will be used in World War IV: sticks and stones."
Yes.
Wow. So I think that kind of puts a spin on it on how important it is to avoid that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is.
What is the good times create? Or hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times.
Good times create soft men.
And it's a never-ending cycle. And we haven't really had our war. I mean, we had our debacle for 20 years in Afghanistan.
I mean, in theory, we've been at war for a while.
Yeah,
but that doesn't count. Yeah, this is very indefinite.
No one's supported
cut off the sides.
Well, and... I mean, when we think about, like, our parents who were experiencing, like, the war in Vietnam and the war in Korea.
Yeah.
Those were very, like, palpable.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were very real.
And for us, it's like, okay, I know some people who are in the military and who are in Afghanistan.
You have to dig for the stories. You have to dig for the real.
We kind of grew up in this post-postmodern irony where everything was just kind of ironic and sarcastic to us. Like, it was like the war that didn't matter because we knew we were there for bullshit reasons.
Yeah. Five countries, all that. Interesting. So, Moneypenny, doing her Moneypenny thing, just pulled up an interesting article from Bloomberg, who I do not trust, but this does look like a good article.
Okay, Bloomberg cares about money before everything, which is my personal take. But that's not a bad perspective. Like, as long as you understand that that's where the perspective, you know, money does talk. So it's basically saying that Putin's invasion of Ukraine is showing China that perhaps openly attacking Taiwan might not be in their best interest.
This is kind of what I think China does too. They always want to have a measuring stick. They want to see where the attitudes are. Testing our current administration and our current feelings over
here. They are careful.
Yeah.
The Chinese are a very careful people. Mm-hmm. They're very calculating.
And they're already winning an economic war with us. They are. And have been for
Their manufacturing has just become so good. And it's unbelievable.
The way they devalue their own money and then buy up all of our properties and our debt.
And there's a very good balance in China, in my opinion, a sustainable balance between state-owned industry and privately-owned industry. And, like,
they've done a very controlled way of allowing privately-owned business to blossom under state rule.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous. Because at the end of the day, it's all state-owned.
Yes.
Well, guys, I don't want to make any early promises, but I do have a couple of people I'm going to approach for guest spots.
Okay.
One of them has already kind of accepted. We're going to talk about RVing, how to live off the grid in a few ways. There's a couple other subjects we're going to cover.
I think I know who that is.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you absolutely do. The other people are kind of fresh potentials. Justin.
Yeah.
Your friend that witnessed the UFO. Where are we at?
Haven't heard back from her in a long time. That's kind of our MO. We go months and months without speaking.
So when the iron is hot, my man, let's strike.
I'll hit her up.
Yeah. So guys, we are still here. We're still alive. We're doing well. Yeah. We're actually doing great. I think everybody's in a better headspace than we've been in for since August for me at least.
Yeah.
And things are moving forward, going good. I have more bourbons stacked up than I can count.
Yeah.
It is wild.
We might have a problem.
Maybe, but
it's fun.
I would like to see us come back strong and get consistent again and really start pumping out some good content.
Yeah.
And I think we can do that.
The world is looking very interesting right now, which is one of the reasons why I was like, hey, I don't care that it's a Monday night. We need to get together. We need to talk about this because, you know, I was willing to take a break off for the Super Bowl. Little did I know that right behind the Super Bowl would be a Ukraine invasion and all these crazy things. I'm like, well, the world got interesting fast. And that's how it always goes.
What is the quote? I hope that you do not live an interesting time.
Right.
fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah, the well-wish that's not
our times just keep on getting more interesting. This is like the third or fourth Armageddon event I can think of.
Yeah.
We survived
Y2K.
Y2K. Yes.
It's supposed to be so scary.
Now, Y2K did screw some stuff up, but it was not nearly as bad as they thought it was.
I actually recently read an article about Y2K, and apparently there were programmers working down to the second.
They were.
To fix the loop.
To fix it. Yeah. And had they not done that, it could have been disastrous.
Yes, it could have. It could have deleted accounts and done all kinds of crazy things, which is hilarious because that was a blatant human error. Yeah. Like, there was no forethought. They thought by then Skynet would be controlling everything and we wouldn't have to worry about it. Dang it.
Yeah.
So.
But people were very worried and there was a good reason.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that programmers across the board had not quite thought that through. Mm-hmm. The fact that we were very close to the change of millennia. The
glaringly obvious.
Like we designed for right now, not for 20 years from now. Yeah.
And speaking of the way that our perception and everything changes, if you go to the Facebook page, Justin had shared a thought that was just brilliant about how the New World was discovered, and so many wars have been fought over the spices you have sitting in your cabinet. I can go to Walmart and pick spices that thousands of people died for up for 88 cents.
Yeah, I think that deserves its own dumpster dive.
I think so, and that's why I'm bringing it up now.
Awesome. Well,
everyone, thank you again for tuning in. We had to go long. We had to, because we haven't been here for a while.
Yeah.
So we are back. We have all of our guests. Everyone's just getting settled again. We're official. We're here. We're not going anywhere. We've got a year's worth of episodes, I think, as of this.
Awesome. So keep
posted, everyone. Thank you again for listening, and keep on dumpster diving.
Praise God.